Good morning, everyone. I'm going to share with you, I'm going to try and steer away from the obvious things that we know about these people. My job as a social researcher is essentially to talk to people throughout the year, and I've been doing that for about a decade. And just finding out, I guess, what makes them tick, what their aspirations are, what their dreams are, and it's about gross generalisations. Essentially, what's coming through in terms of that you can pin down to a particular segment of the population. And I just want to run through a few things with you. And I'll run through from Gen Y to Gen X up to the boomers and give you a few points that may be helpful. Gen Y are renowned as being a difficult workforce to manage because whilst they've had, this is a real shock to them, these recent times. They've just known boom times. They're an overconfident, very demanding workforce. And it's the most common conversation, the most common talk that I give, in fact, is in organisations, how to manage Generation Y. I recently had a meeting with a financial client, one of the big ones, and he said to me that 2 months ago he'd hired a Gen Y who just resigned, and his reason for resignation was he wasn't getting enough one-on-one time with the CEO. It is a double-edged sword with Gen Y, of course, because on the one hand, they are so overly optimistic, and it is just a unique place in Australia to have such sheer self-determination. Here's a young woman who's just saying, here's what she plans to do.
Movies, making them, many of them, that's all I want to do. Build an empire for good. Just believing in yourself and like going, people can do anything they want, so why can't I?
People can do anything they want. This has been the mantra that parents have been instilling in their kids for a couple of decades now. And it's actually getting more perverse, not less so. The idea is that self-esteem is what raising kids is all about. It really doesn't matter anything else. It really is just about how they feel about themselves. In fact, it's interesting in the obesity debate in Australia, for years now, you know, we've been talking about it, but it just doesn't penetrate into the household. And the reason is the parents are far more concerned with the kids having happy self-esteem than packing a couple of extra kilos on. And that's what they're focused on. So these people have incredible high self-esteem, and I would say probably overly so. Because, as I've said before, that everybody absolutely wants to be above average, but only half of the people, or just slightly less so, can be, in fact. What they demand is not just purely salary and not just purely income, but what they want is experiences. What they seek is for them to be put in touch and to be advanced on a constant level. They need to know. They know you're using them. They know that you'll spit them out if you need to. They've seen that in society. They're very aware of it, and they're very cynical and astute of how things work. Far more astute than they're giving credit for. And on the other hand, they know that they can get something out of you, and that's what they want. Yeah, they might take off in a year or two and do their own thing and go here and there. That's what they're supposed to be doing. But what they want is from you to give them all the experiences.
I work at the bank 3 days a week. I did my personal training, about to do a massage course. I'm also doing marketing for a Mail Review show. I just love doing 10 million things at once, just keep retraining. And I think, okay, well, I should really go back to the bank full time. And, you know, but I've been plodding along there part time over the past 3 years and I love it. I love knowing I've got that flexibility a couple of days a week to do what I want to do.
It's about not shying away from the other elements of your life, but rather marrying them into them. It's about being the multifaceted person that you are and having your employer absolutely welcome that, as opposed to just tolerate it. But these are the obvious things. So I don't want to go and repeat kind of what these all the areas about Gen Y. But the point to make is that things are changing. At the moment, the third life crisis comes in for them at 30, you know, because they've got all these dreams they want to achieve by 30, and they get to 28, and they go, ooh, geez, how am I going to get that when I've still got a huge credit card debt, and I've only been at a steady job for a year and a half, and all that kind of thing. But the financial gloom is really starting to bite. These people just have not known anything, and we live as people as very short memories. We only know from our own experiences. And when you've had 10 years of absolute boom and jobs galore and you can just flip over and do something else, it just depends what happens. We've seen it bite, and when we had just our most recent study with Gen Y, just as this whole world economy thing was getting its publicity, you could already see, you know, things about debt and credit card. But as I said, it is coming from Gen Y in its early days. So I had one girl say, look, I'm going to have to decide what's what, you know, like, and cut down. And I decided that a facial wasn't as important as my weekly massage. So I just stuck with that. But what we'll see, what that means is if the world continues in economic bad times, if things do get worse and unemployment does rise, what we will see is a reversal to a large capacity of these people, and it will be about status symbol being staying at a job for longer, having more steadiness in your life, having an early mortgage, and then the old things from years ago which allowed people, the old motivations will come back of, you know, you stay here long enough, you know, when banks used to give you a bit of a discount on your mortgage and things like that. It'll be more traditional things, but at the moment it's not the case yet, and if things do improve all of a sudden, then they'll continue to be demanding. I want to move on and say something about the role of women. And I just want to start by saying that the issue has never been the glass ceiling in the last 10, 15 years. It's about the glass wall. Women can achieve anything. They know that. They may not want to because of the cost, the toll that positions take on their lives in managing them. But what they complain about is the glass wall. When you walk into the office, you have to pretend that you don't have kids and a family. Why is that?
A woman goes into the workforce and she goes of a morning, and as you said, she's sitting there and she's probably maybe in a conference and she's thinking, have the children got their lunch? Did they take their raincoat? Did they remember they've got sport after school? A man goes to work, as my husband rightly said, and he does not think about one of those things. It is the woman who is the conduit of information. Only a woman can do that delegating, and they take this aboard because somebody has to run that very, very important nucleus.
Why do they have to pretend that the home life doesn't exist, so there are no worries in the corner, that they have, what they want is an integrated capacity, the ability to mix it as they see fit and according to their needs on a daily basis? So what we've come up with is this thing that everyone boasts about, you know. A lot of organisations say we offer job sharing, we've embraced part-time. And it is quite remarkable, I guess, because women have been screaming about this for 20 years. This is so recent. You know, the big law firms today are really proud of the fact that job sharing is just quite a recent introduction and they've managed it. But let me tell you something that I hear from women all the time about these things. First of all, job sharing sounds beautiful and easy and lovely. It's bloody hard. The two personalities that share a particular job have to be so interconnected. And when you allow for the fact that there's some ego and there's things that one person, you know, when you do all the work and the second person presents it all and gets all the credit, these things are really hard to manage. But instead, what women are forced to do is graciously accept that it's a wonderful thing they've been allowed to do. And I guess I'm just pointing out that it's just not that easy. The other thing is part-time roles. I mean, part-time roles are a godsend, obviously. But the thing about them is that the women who work part-time, their employers tend to forget not to give them more than 3 days' work for the 3 days they're there. So they tend to get 4 days' work or 5 days' work. They have to squeeze into the 3 days. And that's not too bad. They're not complaining about that. But what it does mean is that when they're in the office, they really have to work. Now, that's fine, but what they miss out on is the general office joviality that extends. They don't have time for having lunch with their friends in the office or the water cooler conversation. They miss out on all these things because they have to work so much harder. And I think we haven't found it easy. We haven't found a solution yet to actually managing the time that they have in terms of the workload that they have. But we're overly proud of it. But this will all change. And women have been screaming about it for a while. And it's going to change because dads have changed. Now, men are going to be demanding these things. Now, as a society, a fairly secular society at that, where we're trying to look into values and what's really important in life, we're increasingly asking about meaning in life, what makes us meaningful. And men have been allowed to do that now. They've been allowed to be active dads, to embrace the kids, to spend time with them. And look, the reality of the time they spent together may be quite different from their perception. But it's the reveling in it. It's a bit like the dinner. When you ask people about the family dinner, they say, look, once a week at least, we sit down and we talk and discuss. And I've been there and I've seen these family dinners and they last about 15 minutes in reality. But the perception is that it's really something important. But as younger men continue to change the attitudes and shift, they're going to insist on being active and involve dads and playing a key role. And that means that they'll insist their employers amend to that as well. Now, in most organisations, that's pretty tokenistic still. And for a man to say, look, I'm going to be doing this and this, it's going to be pretty progressive for them to be doing it. And what happens is, in an organisation, men will say, look, I'm going to take off Wednesday afternoon because I've got to take my kid to this and this, and it'll be tolerated. But it won't be embraced wholeheartedly. They're not going to feel great about themselves for doing it. And that's really what they're crying out for. A sense of what is really the most important thing in life.
I reckon it's when the kids put their arms around you, they tell you that they love you and you know that they mean it. And it's not because of what you can do for them or that you're good at doing something. It's just because you're you. It's a good point in the day, no matter how bad the day's been.
And what's remarkable and what's changing is you see all these politicians quitting their jobs and they cite, look, I want to spend more time with my family. But what they don't say is their kids are in their late 20s, early 30s by now and they don't really need them exactly now. And men are trying to reverse that. And this is a major shift and really it's dragging our feet behind. You may know that in Sweden, paternity leave is compulsory. It's compulsory for men. This is really what people are about. Nobody wants to finish their job. And what they've seen is seen all these people who finish their lovely careers and their fantastic things. And they go, okay, so what did you do in life, really? And I think I don't want to kind of go into the cliches, but these cliches, I mean, cliches are there because they're based on something and people are looking for what's important to them. So men will shift as this one has.
And I don't mind shopping. I don't mind going to vacuum.
All right, I'm stuck, so I'm going to move on without that. The biggest thing to think about, though, with Gen Xers, and really these are the people in their 30s and 40s at the moment, is we've got all these Gen X people who have got kids, and obviously they make up a large component. But I think what we forget about is that there's 25% of the population of people in their 30s and 40s who won't have kids. We talk about a baby boom at the moment. Everyone talks about a baby boom. And I see it more as a baby blip, in fact. Because what we've discovered, essentially, is that all these, the women who've heard, look, I can wait forever, basically. Time is on my side. IVF will do its job. Have discovered that, hold on, the success rates aren't that great. And it really is about missing the boat. And what we've got now is people hurrying up, essentially, before they miss the boat and catching up on it. So it will settle down over a period of time. And yet, out of choice and mostly out of time expiry, I guess, there will be quite a significant proportion of the population who just will not have kids. Now, what that will lead to is a real disgruntlement in the workforce. Between the workforce that's mending itself and changing to suit the people who are parents and who have particular goals in life and a particular kind of aspirations and know what life is about. And then on the other side, you'll have all these people who take a lot more greater meaning in their work because kids give natural meaning to people's lives. But in the absence of that, people have to find new meanings and what's important to them. And they will do that. A lot of it comes through obviously other areas and through the workforce. And there'll be two different sets of people. Apart from that, you'll have one set of people who are really paying for private school and paying for extracurricular activities and, you know, strapped for cash basically for 20 years of their life. And these other people are completely cashed up and living the good life. And I think we will start to see certain clashes within the workplace about how these people will interact with each other and what will one sustain and what the other. What kind of management style will be offered by somebody who lacks the empathy for that? And I think that's one of the great challenges we're going to have over the next decade or two in terms of where the workforce is heading and how we treat these people. And there's a lot of them, and we seem not to recognise them at this stage. Moving on to the boomers, and by the way, there's a term that the English have come up with for these people called the Sarahs, and they call these young women, you know, single and rich and happy, essentially. But that ignores the men who also play a role there. Look, let me move on to the boomers. And there's not much to say about the boomers that hasn't been said, because the trend hasn't changed all that much. They're just getting older. They're reaching the traditional retirement stage, or they've just passed a retirement age, or the eldest ones have just passed it. And still is the case that they have not thought about their future enough, and they really don't know. They haven't considered how they're going to survive for the rest of their lives. They've been a bit shocked into it in the last couple of years. As they say, look, we used to read about ourselves, about how cool we were. Now all we read about is what a burden we're going to be on society over the next 20 years. And that's not much fun doing that. So, I mean, the kind of things we've got to look out for the boomers is, the first thing is that they're going to keep working. And they're going to keep working, one, out of necessity, because a lot of them won't have a choice. Secondly, because they're going to want to be working. They're going to keep working because they're just young and sprightly, and they've got plenty of time, and they want to do stuff with their time. And they're going to start new careers, and women are really, they're carving the path, you know, with the kids growing up, and it's their time, and it really is an opportunity to, what do I want to do with myself now? What change of career? Much of it will depend, obviously, on what opportunities you've got in terms of what financial options you have. But I think we really have not, as a society, grasped what this aging disgracefully really means. Our expectations of what people are going to do in their 60s and 70s are still rooted in the past. And yet these people are far from wearing a cardigan and just having a game of golf and walking along the beach. They really are, and they're surprising us constantly. And I guess that's a real difficulty, because if you look, I look a lot at advertising, because advertising really reflects a lot. And they're the only people in society who say, how come you don't speak to me? How come you don't say anything to me that reflects who I am? And the truth is that we don't, because the people writing the ads happen to be in their 20s. And if you're in your 20s, anyone over 35 is really almost dead. So what happens when you're in your 60s, essentially? They feel ignored. Well, ignored as in unheard.
You know, trying to find a job, and he was late 40s, early 50s. No one wanted to talk to him, no one would interview him. And I remember going into the city of Melbourne with him and standing on a corner while he went off to his interview, and I said to him when he came back, just look around. There's not one grey-haired old fellow in the city of Melbourne. They're all these young, upwardly mobile, 25 to 35-year-olds with mobiles attached to their ears. There's no older people left in there.
When you're in your 50s, and by force, especially, you've had to go out and find a new job, it is so demoralising. They feel utterly demoralised. Obviously, there's a sense of self-esteem and all that in there, but they feel invisible, that people just don't want to hire them. And I've got to say, on the one hand, Gen Y have got a lot more initiative and excitement and etc., but boomers make great employees in those terms, because they're just not going to rush off and go over to Bali and then to India and build a house in Guatemala and do another course. They're satisfied with the things in their life. So they make really good employees. So what we're seeing is really people having forced back to go back to work, wanting to go back to work, ideally on their own terms as consultants or doing their own thing and calling their own shots. And then what we're seeing is women just emerging through as such a powerful force. And if you look at the mature age students at university and the number of women you find there, I mean, essentially what they've done is they've raised the kids, they've done their job, they say, okay, I've done what's expected of me, now it's my time, really, and I'm going to do whatever I want now. And it's actually them, they're very similar to the attitudes of people who are much younger than them. Look, but I want to, two things that are really important, I guess, to finish off on. One is this idea that I tend to call generational blending. And it's just had recent discussions with some Gen Ys and some boomers. And I was really looking at how much interaction do you have with each other? And the truth was very little. And we're trying to discover why is that. So why don't you speak to the other people? Why don't you have reason? Because the commonality or the lack thereof is not that strong. You know, you go to a good concert in any city these days and you'll find a huge mix of people of all ages. And what emerges is that the Gen Y people felt the boomers just wouldn't want to talk to them. You know, they'd find them they just would not want to spend time with them. And we asked the boomers, how come you don't spend time with young people? And they said, well, why would they want to spend time with us? And what we discovered really is that the two groups do want to spend a lot of time together. And there's something about mixing it. For the boomers, it's the pleasure of having, I guess, younger people around them makes them feel younger and makes them feel more connected to the world. And that's why, on the one hand, they want their kids to leave home and kind of, you know, free up the extra rooms and go look after themselves. But on the other, they like having them around. It's great fun having young people around. For Gen Y, it's a thing about they want to be able, success for them in the workforce and in life means being able to mix in any particular group, wherever I am and whoever I'm talking to. They're social chameleons. And for them, success is integrating. That's why when they start their first day and they walk into the boardroom and they're pitching into the discussion, because, hold on, I've got something to contribute here. It's not about I'm not going to spend 3 years sitting in the back listening before I speak. I'm going to contribute to what's going on. But I think we're going to see a lot more generational blending, and we should bring it together and not hide it in any sense and not put any caveats on it, because when it does happen, there's some wonderful dynamic that takes place. The final thing is that it's really all about the little things in the workplace. You know, we keep talking about big mega changes, and I always finish off by saying that it's always, you know, that we can do mega things and offer people packages and look at the big trends, but it always comes down to the little things that matter to people, and that's those little things that we always forget. We forget them in professional life, we tend to forget them in personal life, and they're the little pats on the back, the little reminders, the little notices that we're all human, as this guy kind of speaks about a special day in his office.
Yesterday was a really special moment because we reached a couple of our goals, which I were unaware, I weren't aware of those goals. It was like a billion in turnover on FX Online and 100 million revenue or something. We got free pies and sandwiches and stuff, a bit like this, and that really makes me happy.
Sometimes just taking somebody out to lunch, saying to them, look, you've had a really good day, and that, regardless of age, people need to hear that sometimes. Thank you very much.